Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. And on this week's show, we'll be talking about Orca, GNOME, and accessibility in the Linux operating system.
We'll focus on the Orca screen reader, the GNOME desktop, and how accessibility works in Linux. Join us as we talk with Joan Marie Diggs and Alejandro Pinheiro, two of the lead developers, about what's under the hood, how it got there, and how you can help improve it. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip is, Linux is an operating system that's a free alternative to Windows and Mac operating systems, and it comes with really good accessibility built in.
Linux has come a long way in the last decade in terms of the accessibility tools that are built right in and the other accessibility tools that are available to be used in Linux. In fact, when I was working at Xerox as a research scientist, I used to use Unix, which was the predecessor of Linux, a lot to do my development activities and programming.
So did I.
Right. But the only way I could interact with Unix was to use my Windows PC as a terminal emulator to get into the Unix machine itself. But these days, many of these Linux operating systems, which is now free and open source, are available, and there are lots of accessibility tools out there. In particular, we've talked about the Vinux operating system in show 1136. And Vinux is based on Linux, but has a lot of accessibility tools, magnifiers, screen readers, and the like built in right out of the box. And it's also installable without being able to see.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Joan Marie Diggs and Alejandro Pinheiro, although as you'll hear, this is the last time we'll refer to either one of them by their full name. First, here's Joan Marie.
I'm Joan Marie Diggs, but everyone calls me Joni, and I'm the Orca project lead and the GNOME accessibility project, cat herder, chief cook and bottle washer, assistant to the lead, whatever you want to call it. I've been an Orca developer for 5 or 6 years now, becoming the project lead once Oracle laid off what was left of the Sun Microsystems Accessibility Program Office.
Orca is the screen reader that is usable within the Linux operating system. And how I ran into Joni was just being a member of the Orca mailing list and noticing who some of the people were who were contributing to the project.
She talked about she got more heavily involved after Oracle laid off all of these people who used to work for Sun. Can you explain all that?
I think a number of years ago, Sun Microsystems used to have several programmers who were specifically dedicated to accessibility concerns. And it wasn't a large project. I think it was just a small number of people. But basically, they worked together with small numbers of people that were hired in accessibility departments at other companies, and then also some volunteers around the worldwide community to make some of these accessibility things happen in the Linux operating system. And then I think when Oracle bought Sun, they weren't so interested in keeping some of the accessibility work going on, and so people were redistributed, and some of this effort changed a lot.
It's an interesting story how Joni ended up working on this stuff full time.
Did you used to work for Sun?
No, I didn't. In fact, until this past October, I was a community contributor / volunteer. In October, I joined Egalia, and it's been great because now I can focus on Orca rather than having it be what I did, you know, on evenings and weekends after a really long day at the day job.
So what had you been doing when you were a community volunteer for this project?
I actually, for nearly 15 years, worked for the Carroll Center for the Blind. I am no longer certified, but I am certifiable in orientation and mobility and what they now call vision rehabilitation therapy. And economy being what it was, I got laid off. What was neat is within about 3 hours of tweeting, oh my goodness, I just got laid off, Egalia offered me a job.
And I take it you're a programmer, right?
Yes, I mean, for a Galia, I am. That's not what I was doing for the Carroll Center. I'm a teacher. Before that, I was a librarian. But in between being a librarian and a teacher, I did take a number of computer science classes, then discovered the field of blindness and visual impairment, and then went off and got a second master's degree.
I guess it's never too late to start a new career. And how fortuitous for everybody else in the Linux community.
And here is Alejandro.
Hello, I am Alejandro Pinheiro, but you can call Alex. Most of my family call me that, so it's totally okay. I am Spanish. I studied computer science here in Coruña. That is a city in the northwest of Spain. As Jean-Marie, I work for Igalia. I have been working on Igalia about 6 years now. While Jean-Marie is working more on Orca, on the application, and work more on the low level, on the ATK, that is a library used by the applications.
They both talked about working for Igalia, and Igalia is truly worldwide. These two are separated by a world.
Igalia is headquartered in Coruña in Spain, but they have employees all over Spain, in several parts of the United States, including Joni in New Hampshire, and in several other countries in Europe as well. We'll be talking with Alex and Joni about the accessibility projects at Igalia.
Accessibility is just one team or one group within Igalia. Right now, we are really two and a half people in a company that has 44 employees, most of whom are software developers. So accessibility is one really important thing that Igalia does. Igalia is a free software engineering company, so primarily doing development work, also training work, anything I would think in the general area of free software engineering and development.
So again, as Joni mentions, accessibility at Igalia, as with many companies, is just a small part of what they do and other companies do, but they managed to leverage their work very heavily by getting contributions from many people around the world who just like the program and many volunteers, and somehow this stuff all gets done. It's really kind of amazing.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is the Orca screen reader, the GNOME desktop, and how accessibility works in Linux.
Is Orca an acronym, or is that just a whale?
It's just a whale with a cane. My understanding is that it was named by the original project creator at Sun Microsystems, who is, I believe, Mark Mulcahy. And it doesn't stand for anything, but when you think about like all the stuff we have in blindness and visual impairment for assistive technology, we have JAWS and we have Dolphin, and it's just kind of fish-like, and so we have Orca.
Makes it sound like there's something fishy with these screen readers.
So you may be a little bit familiar with some of these names and acronyms. I doubt you know what they all mean. Initially, GNOME was an acronym for GNU Network Object Model Environment. Its mission has changed over the years, but of course it kept the name GNOME. In turn, GNU is an acronym. It's kind of a recursive acronym, if you will, that means GNU's not Unix. And Unix is actually just a word. That's the name of the Unix operating system.
Unix is the predecessor to Linux that AT&T developed and owned for many years until it morphed into this open source Linux OS.
We asked Joni for a quick description of the relationship between Orca and GNOME.
Orca is part of GNOME. The GNOME project is a whole desktop environment. So it includes a web browser and editors and a terminal, you know, all the kinds of stuff you get on a Mac. And if you go to www.gnome.org, you can read all about it. And like you have VoiceOver in the Mac, you have Orca in GNOME.
And Orca is a very functional screen reader with many of the features that you'll see in the screen readers that are available in Windows and on the Mac. It also attaches to Braille output, and you can customize it in many different ways, and it works pretty seamlessly with many of the applications.
Alex works on the application side of the system in order to make applications accessible, and Joni works on the Orca screen reader side of the system that presents information to the user. In between these two sides sits ATSPI-2, as they will explain.
If you picture either an hourglass, you know, one of those old sand hourglasses, or maybe a couple of funnels with the mouth open at the top and then open at the bottom and very narrow in the middle. Alex is up at the top of the funnel, and I'm kind of down at the bottom of the funnel with Orca. And what's in the middle is something called ATSPI-2, the Assistive Technology Service Provider Interface. So basically, if anything that makes it down to ATSPI, Orca can see it. And so Orca can see what we call events. So if you tab around, you know, from button to button and land on a combo box and then move to a radio button, we get focus events. If you select text, we will get text selection events. As you're typing, we get text insertion events. And so what Orca is doing is it's looking at those things it sees from ATSPI, and it decides if it cares or not. And if it cares, it presents it. And if it doesn't care, it tends to ignore it, or it might file it away as having happened. Orca's really focused on presenting the normal native application environment. It's trying really hard to not do special off-screen things for users who are blind. And as a result, what it really cares about are these events coming in that say, here's where focus is, or text selection has changed, or there's new text that's been pasted in, that sort of thing. The other thing Orca can do through ATSPI-2 is query for information. Text selection has changed. Well, great. What is selected now? Or text has been inserted. Great. What characters have been inserted? Or if the user uses, you know, backspace or control backspace, Orca should present what just went away. Well, we can get that often through events, but if we want to know a bit more about the text and what's currently displayed on screen, so we can then turn around and display it, say, in Braille, we query the different interfaces from ATSPI.
Orca basically translates all of this information into either speech or Braille per the user's desire?
Exactly.
With this ATSPI-2 in the middle, it enables many assistive technologies to be hooked onto that and to learn about what's happening with the applications.
Joni kept talking about having this hourglass type system, and the people at Egalia keep a diagram handy, or at least in their minds, so that they can know how all of the pieces fit together. And we will have that diagram available through the show notes at our website, because Joni and Alex kindly provided it to us. So how does this system differ from the way things used to work?
In the past, I don't know, 20 years ago, for example, it still will require to wonder how to interact with the computer or get the information from the computer, and was a chaos and was really messy. So this ATSPI tries to be a common way to interact and to get information from the application that I've run.
Basically, what they've done here is to make some uniform standard of how the assistive technology can query and know about what's happening in the applications. As Alex pointed out, it was a lot of work before and very inconsistent if every application developer had to enable all the assistive technology in their particular application. So this makes things a lot easier for the developers, and it also makes the access programs more robust and enabled to cope with more applications out of the box.
And we've been focusing mostly on Orca, but other assistive technologies such as screen magnifiers or speech recognition are hooked into the structure in essentially the same manner as Orca is.
Right. They can catch the events coming through the ATSPI-2 mechanism and provide whatever kind of feedback other people with other needs have to have in order to do their work.
So if this is intriguing you and you want to get started using Orca with GNOME, here's how you would start.
I think a good place to get started are a couple of GNOME mailing lists. We have a GNOME-accessibility-list at GNOME.org mailing list. And we have the Orca-list mailing list. And the reason I'm saying Orca-list is we often just say Orca list, but the actual address of the mailing list is orca-list@gnome.org. And what's really neat about the Orca list, and it's become more so since I took over the project, is as long as it has something to do with using Orca and accessibility and GNOME, to me, it's on topic. And so a lot of users have come together on the Orca list and are helping each other out. And sometimes the answer is, here's the documentation. Or sometimes the answer is, yeah, you know, that's really hard. Here's how I do it. And we get some really great discussions. And all of the list discussions are archived. And you could search them, but, you know, honestly, the best way to search them is not through the GNOME interface for doing so, but through Google.
Well, that just points out what we've been saying on this show all along. Let Google be your friend. But I can also tell you from experience, these lists are very friendly and very helpful. If you have any questions relating to Orca or any of the other assistive technologies, people are very eager to help you out and walk you through.
Joni and Alex referred several times to various toolkits such as ATK, GTK, Qt, which is spelled QT. Can you describe what a toolkit is and how they're used?
Basically, toolkits are people will put together sort of a library of tools to make it possible for the application developers to put their applications together more easily. So, for example, if you're making an application and it has some buttons and combo boxes, edit boxes, well, you don't have to write code to create your own edit box and your own custom combo box. You can grab one out of these toolboxes because it's already been done for you and just kind of mix and match. And then you can dedicate your time to making the special utility that's particular to that application. Some applications do cheat and they make some kind of custom widget or button or something and they don't use it from the toolkit. Well, and then that will present a problem for the assistive technology. But to the extent that you use some of these accessible toolkits, your applications will be very accessible. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on.
But more specifically now to the GTK.
So if someone wants to create a new application for GNOME, it has a toolkit that in the case of the GNOME is called GTK.
Presumably, if people use this GTK toolkit, then these applications should be reasonably accessible out of the box.
Exactly, exactly. The idea is that GTK has all the accessibility support. So if you create an application with GTK, in theory, that will be already accessible.
We kept postponing this interview with you because you were working really hard on the latest release of GNOME. Can you tell us what's new and exciting about the latest release that's different from prior releases?
The snarky answer, but I'm dead serious, is what's different now is GNOME 3.4 is accessible and it can actually be used by users who are blind.
Hey, that's a great answer.
I'm going to try to provide a story step by step. In 3.0, we tried to migrate all the technologies to the new technologies, including ATSPI2. In 3.2, we tried to get all the things working smooth and improving the performance because we also have a performance drop on 3.0 and also to improve the how stable was all the stack. And in 3.4, we have better performance, more stable, and also we have a GNOME shell accessible. That means that a user can interact with the desktop without using the old desktop in use it on GNOME 2.
You know, one thing that's nice about Linux is there are many options. So GNOME is one of the desktops, and it's one of the more accessible ones, but there are also others. There's a Unity 2D desktop, a Unity 3D desktop, and there are many different distributions of Linux. So you can get the Linux distribution, which is made particularly for the visually impaired with a lot of that accessibility built in, and you can install it by yourself without seeing. There's Ubuntu, which is one of the more leading edge distributions. There's Debian, there's SUSE OS, and there's all kinds. So there are many choices in Linux. If you don't like one thing, you find another distribution, you find another application, and they're all free.
Joni and Alex have been working really hard, along with a whole passel of volunteers who've been pitching in order to make Linux accessible.
It sounds like you're doing a very admirable job of trying to integrate accessibility right into these mainstream Linux OS systems. Do you ever think that there'll be a time when just the mainstream OS will be so accessible that you won't need these sort of side OSs with special customizations?
I think we're getting there, finally. More and more, we're seeing people saying, well, here's what I want to do and make it work with Orc. And it's like, well, you know, if you really want, I could probably try to, you know, change Orc a little bit to deal with that. And people will say, no, no, I'm going to change it in my application. I'm going to change it in my toolkit. So we're seeing a lot more interest in not putting this burden on Orca, but in fixing it right to begin with. And so with that spirit, that brings us a lot closer to the exact situation you described, where we don't need those custom distros specifically for people who, say, happen to be blind. So that's really exciting. Between the spirit of accessibility needs to be in the applications and toolkits coming from those developers and our movement towards a very standard ATK implementation, I'm really excited about where we're going. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but check back in a year, check back in 2 years. I really think things are going to come a long way by then.
And as I said, these Linux distributions have come a long way in the past 5 to 10 years, and mostly based on community efforts and volunteer efforts around the world, in addition to the, you know, people like Joni and Alex who are working on this professionally. But we'll have links in the show notes to various distributions of Linux that you might want to try out. And of course, you can always Google for Linux distributions and download whatever distribution you'd like.
Now for this week's high-tech item, how you can get involved in improving Orca and or GNOME. Here's where to start if you're interested.
The best way to find everybody is, if you use IRC, is to come to #A11Y in irc.gnome.org. And what's really neat about that particular chat room is that it's kind of been where everyone has congregated, not because necessarily GNOME is so awesome, even though GNOME is awesome, but often accessibility developers from just everywhere, you know, they're hanging out wherever, and in #A11Y, like the main Firefox accessibility people hang out on GNOME's channel, #A11Y. The Qt accessibility developer, Qt being spelled Q-T, who's a Nokia employee, I think he's in Germany or the Netherlands or wherever he is often there. We're in there. The ATSPI developer is in there. The GTK developer, I mean, so whatever you care about in terms of accessibility, we're all in #A11Y on irc.gnome.org. And if people show up and say, hi, I care about this, and here's what I know how to do, we will hand you documents, a broom, links, whatever you need to be able to contribute.
So that's great to know how easily accessible all the main developers are and how well they network together. So if you want to help out, it makes it really easy. Or if you just want to hang out and learn a little, or even if you have some suggestions, that you can easily get their attention, and hopefully your suggestions can make it into some of the next versions of these applications and toolkits.
And as one indication of how accessible all of these developers are, when we got it into our heads that we'd like to do a show on Orca and GNOME, we sent an email note to Joni, and she said, sure, I'd be glad to. Do you mind if I bring in Alex as well, and you can talk to both of us, and that would make a more complete story? And we said, of course, that'd be great. So, you know, they're very happy to share their knowledge and involve more people and spread the tools around. So what are some of the things that they'd like to get done by this army of volunteers, possibly including you?
In terms of what absolutely has to be done, my biggest thing right now is testing bug reports and, wherever possible, bug fixes in all of the applications that Orca tries to provide access to. Orca's trying to just let the user interact with, you know, whatever applications he or she wants to use without doing a ton of stuff to change that user interaction. What that means is we need those applications to be doing the right thing.
And there are other things they'd like help with.
Other places people can jump in and help is to start writing best practices guides, which actually, taking a step back, involves doing a little bit of analysis. Like, you know, here's a combo box. What events should we see when the user up and down arrows in them? What events should we not see? How can we get a VCL, which is what LibreOffice uses, a Gecko, a Clutter, a WebKit JDK, a GTK, and a Qt or QT combo box to all look exactly the same? Because if Orca can't even tell the difference between a, you know, what, you know, a combo box say from Gecko and a combo box say from GTK, then Orca doesn't have to have a bunch of special code. Orca just goes, oh, it's a combo box. Here's what I need to do.
I think that's one of the things that makes this community-wide effort so successful is they're very careful about processes, documentation, planning documents, bug reporting, and they do a very good and careful and thorough job of those things. And so that makes it easier to make progress on some of these issues.
And as enthusiastic as Joni sounded about getting help in those areas, here's what she really wants help with.
The call to action that I would really like to get people involved in are twofold. One is accessible installers. If you go to DistroWatch, there are a bunch of different distros out there. And I think it's kind of a drag that if you happen to be blind, the only way you're going to install it is by getting a sighted assistance. I just think that's really a problem, and that Orca users really should have access to whatever distro they want to use. And so if all the people who can make an accessible installer took on one distro of their choice and did that, that would be awesome. The other thing that I would really like to find people to work on is better voices. So Orca uses Speech Dispatcher, and Speech Dispatcher by default uses eSpeak. And eSpeak is really, really performant, but it's so robotic sounding. And users get used to it. I've gotten used to it, but we need better voices. And there is on the eSpeak site documentation on how to improve the voices. And if everyone who had those skills picked the voice of their language and just make them sound a little less robotic, I think that would make a huge difference.
I must say, being used to some of the commercial screen reader voices, it took a little getting used to understand and be comfortable with the eSpeak voices. So that is an area where it'd be nice to see some better voices.
And if you do want to help, Joni encouraged everybody to contact her.
Come to Pound A11Y, find me. My nick in Pound A11Y is Joni.
Or you can find her on the Orca mailing list too, which is where we found her.
If you missed any of the links we've given, they'll all be in the show notes, which you can find at our website, www.viewpointsplus.net. That's it for show number 1222. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about multisensory exhibits at science museums. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.